Ladies and gentlemen, you are now entering the Decent Christian Talk podcast. Enjoy.
Who want to catch a whirlwind? Experience verbal defacement. See firsthand the barbaric method of your replacement. And feel this raw pathogen flex. It's God's wrath in the flesh. Nowhere to run but on back to your set. Go break the news about the tunnel.
Decent Christian Talk episode 44. Well, this is the first episode of the post DC Talk cruise, and don't worry, we will have more about the DC Talk cruise. But this episode is specifically regarding propaganda. He has released a new record called Crooked. It's one of the best albums of 2017. You can check that out at humblebeast.com. It's definitely one of my favorite, my personal favorite releases of the year. So we're devoting this episode to that. Before we get into that, I just kind of want to run down the whole show for you. Before we get into it, I would just like to thank everyone that's a new listener. The first episode of season 2 with Toby Mac was a great success. It's one of our most listened to episodes already. And for those of you that are brand new to the show, we just thank you so much for joining us. We got a great show for you today. We're going to start the show out with our exclusive interview with Propaganda. We talked with him actually the day before the release of Crooked, and it was just exciting to talk with him. He's an artist that I've followed over the years. The heat of the day that we talked may have gotten to my head because I thought he had only released a couple albums, and I forgot that he had been in Tunnel Rats, which I listened to for a long time. But anyway, regardless of that, we're excited to bring you that interview. And following that interview immediately is a conversation I had with a dear friend of mine named Adam Johnson. Adam's been a friend of mine for probably about 10 years now. He lived close to where I live for a while. He's moved away since then, but we've stayed in touch and we got to reconnect and talk about just some of the topics of Propaganda's new record and just kind of some of his perspective on things, and it's a really fun conversation. It's not always one of the easiest conversations, some of the topics that we talk about, but it's definitely one that is worthy of talking about, and I'm excited to bring you guys that conversation that I had with Adam. Before we get to that, we're going to head right into our interview with Propaganda. So let's hit it.
All right, hit that horn, babe. Let's dance.
When you looking at it all wrong, but you don't care to fix it, you prefer to write a song. A scrambling, ramblings of PTSD.
So you got an album coming out, like, tomorrow.
Oh, we're going in. Yes,
this
tomorrow.
This is big.
Yeah.
This is is this your third album?
It's my seventh.
Seventh?
Wow. Yeah.
Is it your third on Humble Beast?
My fourth on
fourth. Okay, I'm terrible.
Yeah.
At this.
This is a great interview. This awesome. Is starting off wonderful. The first album was a combination of me and Odd Thomas, so I'll give you that.
Okay, yeah, that's right. Okay, so you had this one's called Crooked.
Yes.
What can you tell us about this album that's dropping tomorrow?
That it's wonderful.
Yeah.
It's as far as like sonically or like content. Or
content, yeah.
Content. Well, the idea is like, I am a crooked person. Because of that, I have crooked desires. We build crooked relationships that mm-hmm. feed our crooked desires, and then establish crooked systems that mm-hmm. subjugate crooked people under a crooked system, and all longing for the day that the crooked is made straight. Mm-hmm. So it's quite a like narrative arc of kind of exploring all of those parts of like broken people and broken systems, you know, and it's a lot of angst, but there's also a lot of joy. But they definitely don't. The problems don't wrap up in 3.5 minutes. So they a lot of the songs end very
open ended.
Yeah. Yeah, pretty incomplete.
Yeah, the world has changed a lot since the last album that you had, and mm-hmm. even especially since you started making music. How has that? How has that inspired you as a songwriter and as a mm-hmm. you write poetry too?
Yeah, I think that my father was a civil rights leader, so I've always had somewhat of a socio-political tone in my music. Mm-hmm. It's almost more along the lines that like culture caught up with me, you know what I'm saying? Where it was like, I've never not talked about these things and how our faith kind of interacts with them. I would say the sort of the difference is it's much more urgent. And I think what has changed me more was stuff that happened at home, like more like my since the last album I had another child. So there's much more of that there. And I'd also say I think I've noticed in this record, in relation to the last record, more of my sort of intersectionality, if you will. Like I said, I've always talked about issues of justice, but I found that I didn't extend that to like gender as much as I've learned to do now. I think it's, this one has more to do with like, it's one pale blue dot out there, you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. And if we don't start realizing that, you know, the suffering of one is the suffering of all, mm-hmm. you know what I'm saying? And start like saying that all of it matters, you know what I'm saying? And learn how to be allies for each other, and advocates for each other, then I think that I don't see us getting any further. Yeah.
What? Go ahead.
The way you said that culture's catching up with what you've always cared about, have you seen a surge in listeners for you?
Yeah. I've seen a surge of people going back to old records and being like, oh crap, you've been trying to tell us for a while. And yeah. I'm like, yeah, I have, yeah. You know. So that's been kind of cool. I've seen also sort of like my sort of slow burn of music has given, it's from what I'm hearing, other artists a lot more confidence to kind of like step out and speak on things that they're like really are passionate about, you know, without fear of sort of losing popularity or, you know, festival slots.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah.
Why do you think people get so defensive when you bring up issues like that? And not even defensive, but they get into like an attack mode almost.
I think there's a couple reasons. I think one is like, you know, if you, I mean, you're a married man, you know, no one wants to hear they're wrong. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
And that if something's wrong in our house, that it might possibly be my fault. Mm-hmm. Like that's the, or somehow or another, I'm benefiting from this. From this not working well.
Yeah.
No one wants to hear that. You know what I'm saying? Even if it's like, whether sometimes it's because it's true or other times because you wish it wasn't true. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. It's a sign, at least in a relationship, it's a sign that like, dang, I'm not loving you like I wish I did or like I think I am. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And who wants to hear that? You know? So I know in my life, especially with my spouse, like whenever she has a complaint, it makes me feel like, oh, you're saying I'm a horrible husband. You know what I'm saying? She's like, no, I'm saying this sucks.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Now, having said that, if you have responsibility in this, you need to take it. Being defensive ain't gonna help. You know what I'm saying? So I think that there's that, you know, like sometimes the thought is too ghastly. Sometimes it's like, some of it's like earth shattering. You know what I mean? Like if you, I there's a lot of stuff in my music that I'm challenging, like the very foundation of how you structure identity. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Like pulling back and saying maybe America's not, was never Christian.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, wait, what? And I'm like, try that on.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? You know, and
that's one of the first things people bring up. When
yeah. You're... Yeah. And you go and I'm like, square that circle then.
Yeah.
Like square it for me.
I think people a lot of times. You know? Are just, I mean, the biggest thing I think people have a problem with is just listening.
Like, absolutely.
I mean, the Bible says, be slow to speak and, you know, slow to anger.
Yeah.
You know, listen. And
yeah.
I think we've lost our ability to do that.
Yeah. And, again, going back to, like, the relationship motif, like, sometimes, you know, your spouse may be speaking and you're like, why are you yelling at me? And she's like, I'm not yelling at all. What are you...
Yeah.
Well, stop being so angry. Like, I'm not. What are you... What are you listening? Nobody's. What are you talking about?
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So then, and then a person becomes angry because you keep calling them angry, and you're like, "What? Why? What?" You know? So I think that there's there's that visceral response again that more has to do with like I'm not mad, yeah. You know. And I think me specifically as a believer, like I come up from a place that like I've already been reconciled to Christ and to my neighbor. You know what I'm saying? So like I don't need the affirmation of another person for my personhood. Like yeah. I already know that I've got it from Christ. Now, having said that, you need to affirm my personhood. You know what I'm saying? And you know, so I think that so for me, when I come to the table, I don't carry the same sort of anger, if you will. I mean, don't get me wrong, like there are times, you know what I mean, we're
humans. Righteous anger.
There's sometimes you could be mad, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But I come to the table with an understanding that like I know who I am in Christ. Mm. You know what I'm saying? So
yeah.
I can stand on solid ground and speak about truths for the purpose of reconciliation. You can't skip truth. Like again, try that with your spouse. Try to skip sure. talking about true things and just get to watching Netflix and being like, oh, we're okay right now, right? Like, no. No, we're not.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Go ahead. Okay. Yeah, he never lets me talk. But
yeah,
anyway, the lyrics are still attacking the issues. What are you doing different musically on this new album?
Yeah. So musically, the last few records have been solely in-house produced, whether it was Ah Thomas or Beautiful Eulogy. And, you know, we're Western, like, weird, glitchy, just hipster nerds, right? So this one is much more boom bap. We opened the doors to some other outside producers that I kind of been looking to work with for a while, and we kind of had a different budget now. So I just like we hired studio musicians, and when you hire studio musicians, it's kind of cool because it's like it doesn't matter who's pressing the button. You know what I'm saying? It's like, nah, let's just get in here and vibe. You know what I mean? So there's definitely a much fuller sound. There's more live instrumentation, which is something I wanted to do for a while.
Cool.
You know what I'm saying?
Last question before we get out of here. When you check the iTunes hip hop charts tomorrow, you're going to be on there.
Yes.
Humble Beast gives albums away for free.
Yes.
How does that, like, as an artist, when you know that there's an option to get your album for free, but you're still showing up on the iTunes charts, what does that do for you as an artist, knowing that there's fans that are willing to spend their money on you when they have a free legal option over here?
Yeah, I'm like,
that's crazy.
Like, my fans are stupid. I'm just kidding. It's so humbling. Because granted, when we started, that was like, it was ahead of the curve, you know?
Yeah.
But now with like streaming music, it's kind of like, what?
Yeah.
Everyone's album's free. You know what I'm saying? But I think that, yeah, it just communicates like the strength of just biblical principles of like radical generosity. Like when you present yourself something that's not made like haphazardly, like we broke bread for this, but we're freely giving it to you. You know what I'm saying? The modeling of that. Now if out of your heart's desire you want to support us, you're free to, or you're free not to. You know what I mean? So I think that just modeling that has, from day one, you know, we'll never abandon the free model, even though, you know, I mean, who opens their laptop and downloads music now? Like, nobody's actually
sure,
doing it.
LimeWire.
Yeah, you know what I'm saying? No one's actually downloading tracks, but the option's there because it's like, we're committed to, it's the principle, you know what I'm saying?
Mm.
So I think that, like, I just feel like the only thing I can think is, like, that just communicates, you know what I mean? And people want to reciprocate that sort of freely giving that joy, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And it's like I'm always blown away, like, you know. And I remember oftentimes like trying to, when, you know, on the back end when we're trying to talk to like promoters, producers, like, you know, press outlets, and we're like, I don't think you understand. I'm like, it was number 19 on Billboard. They're like, oh yeah, that's great. I'm like, no, it was a free record. It was number 19. And they're like, wait, what? And I'm like, I don't know, like. Yeah.
Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah,
that's
man.
Really cool.
Thank you for your time.
Thank
man.
You, man. Appreciate y'all.
I'm excited to.
That was easy.
Where can we find you on social media?
Oh, I love it, man. Just Prop Hip Hop is my Twitter and Instagram. Just Prop Hip Hop. You can go to humblebeast.com.
Lakers commentary on there.
Oh, man. There's a lot of Lakers commentary.
Is Lonzo Ball the answer?
You know what? I think he's the answer to ticket sales. I'll tell you that.
Yeah.
we need a superstar. We had Magic. He was a superstar. And then, you know, it's Hollywood. So you had Magic. Then you had Kobe. That's a character. It's Hollywood.
You watched LeVar on Monday Night Raw the other night.
Oh, my gosh.
He had his shirt off.
He's playing a character, you know? And it's selling shoes, as hideous as those shoes are. He's selling them. But it's he's a character. And yeah. I get it. You know what I'm saying? I get it. You know, from somebody that, like, I mean, I know my father. Like, my parents split when I was 14, but my dad was in my life. But, like, the idea of, like, somebody like that invested in their sons and willing to just make a fool out of themselves, you know what I'm saying, is, like, clearly what we're seeing on TV is, like, he's playing a character. Yeah. But, like, it's kind of dope, though, you know, that his dad is that interested, you know what I mean, in his well-being.
You getting a jersey?
Of course.
Yeah.
I used to wish I was Puerto Rican, 'cause that type of black was different. They had curly hair and accents, and I would be called exotic. I would lie and say I'm half something mixed with this and that of sorts. Anything to not just be a field hand descended. I knew black men that was beautiful.
All right, dude. So I will just start out, kind of introduce yourself and kind of where kind of your background, where you've lived. I know that's a long story, so pretty much like the cliff notes of that.
Okay. So to start now.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, first of all, thanks for thinking of me when you're thinking about these topics. We'll be talking about today are pretty near and dear to my heart, so. I always appreciate an opportunity to have somewhat of a platform to discuss them, so definitely appreciate that. For people that don't know me, my name's Adam Johnson. I have lived in a lot of different places, which I think have formed my perspective more completely than a lot of people maybe. I grew up in Baltimore, Maryland. I'm a product of a biracial relationship, and as being a part of that, I have parents who kind of migrated to what they know. And when my dad was living in Baltimore, he was living in what's one of the worst neighborhoods in America. So primarily black ish area with major socioeconomic issues. Whereas my mom was living in a largely white area with the same types of issues. Without knowing so, I mean, they're dealing with the same problems, but blaming each other consistently for the other person's problems. So I thought that was kind of unique. I've also lived in rural West Virginia. I've lived in a really small town called Berkeley Springs, where when I was in high school I was the only black person for half of my time there, and then two other black kids moved in. And we were all kind of ridiculed and dealt with racism in that regard, except for when it was time for athletics. You know, so when they were pursuing me to play football or them to play football, everything was fine. But when it was just everyday life, we were the black kids. I lived in a small town, Illinois, which is kind of similar with the places the area I lived in Illinois for 3 years was. Again, there were three black people in my high school, and I actually lived with two of them. I kind of been on my own since I was 15. When I was a senior in high school, though, I moved in with a family of Liberians. The father was a pastor, and they graciously took me when I had nowhere else to go, and they let me finish out my senior year there and my first semester of college. And the only other people of color, of any color, in our town were the people that I lived with. So fast forward, I went to college in a predominantly white college with a pretty small subset of people of color, mostly black people, but there were some transfer students who came in from Saudi Arabia, Nepal, and then eventually there were some Asians. Like China that came in, started to create a different culture. And then I moved to Florida, and I live in Orlando now, and it is the most diverse place I've ever been. It is completely different than anything I've ever known before. I mean, I thought that I had seen diversity until I came here. Like the gym I lift at is, it's just like a melting pot of ethnicities. El Salvadorians, Nicaraguans, Hondurans, Haitians, Africans, like Asians. It's a beautiful, beautiful, beautiful thing.
Okay, so obviously you have a different perspective, and we're talking specifically about the new Propaganda album. We're going to be talking about a few songs on there. One that comes to mind is a song called Darkie, and just hearing you talk about all those different areas that you lived in, what were some things, what were some ways, I know you talked about being an athlete, you know, being, having both white ancestors and black ancestors, what, how did people expect you to act based on your race and kind of also based on where you lived at the time?
Yeah, I think that's a really good question. I think it would definitely depend on where I was at the time. I think on a large scale, when we talk about what do people expect from you when you are something else, right? Like, I mean, the black narrative, if we look at it through the lens of stereotypes, which is largely what we deal with, the black narrative is what? Go to high school, and if you're lucky, you finish. You know, and if you don't, you're in the streets and you're doing a bunch of this, that, and the other. And it's not always the case. I think the society as a whole has kind of exclusively claimed intelligence for white people or people of less, the less melanated people, I'll say. Whenever I present myself to someone for the first time, it's interesting. I'm also a really large guy, so that could take part in it. But people are genuinely surprised when I'm articulate, or I mean, like specifically at work when I first began, I was presenting, I was having a conversation based on racial reconciliation with a friend, and one of the executives on my board overheard, and she pulled me to the side and said, you know, hey, you're surprisingly articulate. And for her, I don't think she meant that as a slight and at all. I think she was trying to give me a compliment. But what inherently she was saying is, hey, you know, like, are you supposed to be able to speak that way? You know, like, it surprised me. So for me, that's the kind of thing you deal with. I think specifically, if we're talking about individually, I grew up, people just expect you to be, I guess ghetto would be a good term for it. Like, when you're from an urban area, they project you a certain way. And you can't really blame them, because the only thing they see from that, if there's no proximity, because I think that'll be a key of the things that I speak about today, is that proximity changes everything. But if you've never been around people of any group, especially long enough to break bread with them and observe their traditions and just see where they come from, you'll only know whatever your experiences have taught you. And more than likely, your experiences have been shaped by some sort of preconceived notion or media. So when you look at the black plight or black perspective in America, if you haven't grown up in those areas, what do you see, right? You see athletes, entertainers, and then you hear a gangster rap, right? So I think that's kind of what you're dealing with. You're dealing with battling those statues that people have built inside of their minds for what they think black people should be like. But I think it's the same way, you know, for white people too. Because on the other end, I have a lot of friends who grew up with me in Baltimore that are white, that are dealing with the same issues that my black friends are, and when you have certain limitations, you can only reach your limits, and it's across the board. Without proximity, you wouldn't be able to see those things.
So, do you think? I know you talked a lot about just based on your experiences. Do you think a lot of just race issues might be based in ignorance, as opposed to maybe just being hate-fueled, or just from your experience?
Absolutely. I think that ignorance and just lack of experience in general is the root of it all. What I would say is racism doesn't always have to be in a super subtle form, right? It doesn't always have to be, sheet wearing Klansman who tears you down by calling you the ultimate derogatory terms, or someone who straight up tells you, like, I hate you because of this. I think racism can manifest itself in a super subtle form that people don't even realize it, such as telling someone that she's really pretty for a black girl. Or like someone like me, like, hey, you're surprisingly articulate. Now, those weren't intentional derogatory comments more times than not, but they were. What they do is they show that at a subconscious level, you think that black people, or, let's just say people of color, shouldn't be articulate, or they're less beautiful by nature than other people. So I know from experience, when I moved to Illinois, I was pretty much told who to avoid. Once I started playing basketball and I made connections with friends, and you always have the people who are the enthusiasts who love, difference and change. And once they kind of cling to you, they kind of tell you, hey, stay away from this person and this person. They're racist, or they're this, their father's in the Ku Klux Klan, and blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, well, I mean, our town's really so small, I'm not going to avoid anyone. I'm a grown man. So through proximity, and I'll keep his name out of it just in case, there was a person who became a friend who, when I first met him, was full of angst, and he was super volatile towards me. But he didn't know any black people. Like, the only thing he had ever encountered was hearing his father and hearing his uncles joke around a campfire and making black jokes, and watching TV where they paint every black person who's not, who by God's grace didn't become a doctor. So they paint them in this light that they're a gangster rapper, or they're a drug user, or they're just violent people. But through proximity, you're able to change someone's complete perspective. Hmm. I would say, yeah, without proximity, you'll never learn. In any relationship you enter, you're coming in with years of experience and perspective, and your perspective can only be shaped by what you've learned. And however you've learned it, that's whatever. But so, yeah, ignorance is definitely, for me, I believe, the biggest, part of it.
Okay, so you talked a lot about proximity. Now, just kind of a background, Adam and I, we got to know each other in West Virginia through a college ministry, and that's a long story, but that's just kind of the brief background. Coming into Christianity and then dealing kind of with the American church, what were some ways that you felt that they looked at you? And I'm sure there's probably some good and bad experiences. Give us some examples of both.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely an interesting thing, because people, at the end of the day, people are, whether they're in the church or out of the church, they still have their flaws and their limitations. And like Gabe mentioned, we became friends at a campus ministry, but when I first started coming, I was kind of a prisoner in the very beginning. I really didn't want to be there. I wasn't a Christian. I had no interest in being around a lot of these people, and a friend of mine eventually tricked me into going. And when I started going, God started doing the work on my heart, even though I couldn't see it at first. And eventually, by God's grace, he revealed himself to me, and it was a beautiful thing. But ultimately, I started to get really comfortable. I started to get really comfortable with these people who I was sure loved me for the first time in a long time. And I just remember Pastor Matt, who was our campus pastor, and guy Rich Cordellini, who's, like a second father to me. They took me out to lunch one day. I knew they were setting me up for something, but I know we went out to lunch and we had a good meal. We were almost done. And then that's when they kind of dropped it on me. They wanted me to share my testimony with Chi Alpha. And to save a bunch of time, I have a very radical transformation story. I am, if you could find trouble, any type of trouble, I probably found it when I was a young guy. And God brought me out of that. But when they asked me to do that, my natural reaction was, sure, you know, of course. Like, if that's what you guys want from me, absolutely. But at the same time, I want to share what God's done in my life. So a week goes by, and it was around my birthday. So I went in, and I shared. And I really shared. I mean, I poured my heart out, and I was graphic, and I was detailed. And at the end of it all, like, people, not everyone, but there were people who got really distant from me. And it was like they had been opened up to an entirely different side of me. To this point, all they had known is, you know, fun, joking Adam who comes here. You know, we worship together, we may eat a meal together, we play basketball together. But now they're seeing that I wasn't always like that, and it scared them. And it scared them to the point where it felt like these people who are supposed to be the American church, the people who are supposed to draw near to me and say, man, look at what God's done in your life. Like, this is a beautiful thing. They were more like, wow, you're so dirty. It made me feel really terrible for a while, to where I wanted to withdraw. But on the other hand, I had people who did do exactly that, who were floored, who were in awe of God's grace that he showered upon me in the midst of all that, that, you know, were able to walk me through this thing and stand strong with me in the face of people treating me like I was now an outsider. So, I don't know, it's that was one experience that kind of summed them both up for me. I think the American church misses the mark a lot, and I don't think that we sometimes appreciate the extent to which God continuously showers us with mercy, grace, and compassion and love, even though we don't deserve it. And when a story doesn't line up with our expectations or whatever it may be, I feel like we don't receive it well sometimes. So yeah, I mean, that was one story that kind of did them both for me. It was good and bad.
Fast forward to last year, 2016, a lot of kind of, there was a lot of pent up, I think, anger, a lot of rooted racism that came out. And I mean, just from the African American community, a lot of shootings, a lot of killings by police. And you saw a lot of reactions from people in the church that were just kind of surprising to me. What was your reaction to that as someone that's a believer?
Oh, man, that was devastating. That was a hard time for me. That was a hard time for me and some of my really good friends that I've met here, because the biblical concept of lament is one that's so often overlooked. Like, when we read in the Psalms, we see these Psalms of thanksgiving and Psalms of praise, and we gladly recite them over and over again. But there are more Psalms of lament than there are of anything. And it's like, and I don't want to paint white Christians with a broad brush, but it's like the majority culture picks and chooses who's worth lamenting over and who's worth lamenting with, right? Like, if it's an abortion case, man, white evangelicals are ready to go. They're ready to go out. They're ready to pick it. They're ready to do whatever. Now, if you ask them to adopt, that's a different story, right? But when it comes to these, like, racially motivated things, I think the single hardest fact for me was that people were so ready to rebut whatever you had to say that they didn't take time to consider that you're hurting, right? Like, I can think specifically of Freddie Gray, when Freddie Gray was killed by police officers. And whatever the facts may be, I'm not even dive into that. That happened in my city, in my neighborhood, where I'm from, and really affected people that I'm close with. And, I mean, there was blatant misconduct. No matter which way you slice it, something went wrong. And it was just like, to see that and to see how fast people were to, I want to say, disregard my personal feelings and how heavy my heart was because they wanted to be right. That's the hardest part, to come to someone and just want to talk about it, and just share how that hurts my heart and just how I'm familiar with that. When I was 9 years old, you know, we were woken up to my uncle being beaten in the alley by police officers, and it was a misidentification, and they thought my Uncle Alvin was actually my Uncle Rodney. And when they finally realized it wasn't and they let him go, I can remember being 9 years old and standing in the doorway with my cousin watching my uncle struggle to get off the ground and hear the policeman walk by, when one was like, well, that's not even Rodney. And he was like, oh, well, he's a nigger. I'm sure he's done something wrong anyway. That's Baltimore, right? That's a lot of major cities. That's what black people kind of deal with. And it's not always the case. I don't hate police. I'm not that guy. But I understand that police are capable of depravity just like I am. I understand that they're people just like I am, and they can make mistakes. And I've seen them with my own eyes. So when you have people that you're turning to lean on to say, hey, like, this is what's going on and it's killing me, it's hurting my heart, and their first response is, well, let's wait for all the facts. That's pretty tough, you know, because if one of them were to come to you and say, hey, could you pray for my uncle? You know, he's going in for a biopsy, he may have cancer. I wouldn't say, no, I'm not going to pray with you because he might not have cancer. Like, we'll wait until all the facts are in, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Did you kind of have to look in the mirror and during that time and still today and just kind of try to find grace in those situations? And I mean, I'm sure that there were some white brothers that you know, wrapped their arm around you during that time that probably helped, but how did you find grace in those times?
I mean, it's hard. I'm not going to say that it's easy as other times, because it's not. But God is good, and His grace is sufficient for us. And if we're truly clinging to the cross and looking to Christ to inform and the Holy Spirit to inform our decisions, things will be taken care of. When we look at these moments as black people, people of color in general, we need to be going into these situations prayerfully and understanding that they're teachable moments. I think we can look at these things and say, okay, they just don't know. And when someone doesn't know, that's when we have an opportunity to present and to teach. And I think that goes both ways. You know, it's not like only white people can learn from black people. We can learn from each other. But I would say is, grace in those situations, it's important to give it, because at the end of the day, like, God doesn't call us to determine who receives grace and mercy or whatever. He just calls us to be dispensaries, to give it out. So try to live by that, but it's a lot of prayer involved, solitude, and yeah, and like you said, it wasn't everyone whose responses are like that, but the amount of responses you get like that for me are alarming. Because when someone looks you in your face and tells you how much they love you and how they're so happy that you're their brother in Christ and all this other stuff, well, are you my brother when things are difficult, or are you my brother in times of peace? Mm. You know, when the water is calm, yeah, it's easy to say that we're brothers. But now that there's a storm coming, are you going to stand with me and help me take care of things? Well, that's another story. But what I will say in the light of all that, one of the people who was my biggest probably biggest annoyance in that situation has now kind of done a 180. And God has been able to use me and people like me in his life to expose him to an entirely different perspective. And the conversations that we have now are completely different because he's able to see things in a different light. So when the opportunity is there to teach someone, we have to take it, no matter how difficult it is.
Just kind of the last segment of this, based off the song Crooked on the new Propaganda album, do you feel that you're represented in Washington, D.C. at all, or even your local government? Do you feel like your interests are represented?
Excuse me. That's a hard one for me to answer because of how I feel about Washington in general. But I would say no. I don't feel like we're represented there. And if we are, our representatives are just overshadowed by people with bigger interests, with more money, with more capitalistic goals in mind. When I look at political structure in America and then I watch things like the 13th documentary and then I see states slowly starting to legalize marijuana, and now that they're able to use that to turn a profit for themselves while not releasing the people that they locked up for it previously, you just have to wonder, like, how bad was it if it's okay for it to be legal now? And I don't know, you just see different things like that. It's hard to believe that you represent it. I also know that we're not really that far removed from slavery, honestly. We're not really that far removed from when we supposedly got, you know, civil rights, equal rights. Things are changing and they have been changing. What does that look like long term? I don't know. But as long as policymakers all pretty much continue to look a certain way and think a certain way and come from the same places, I mean, how could there ever really be any change? So, to be brief and short on that one, just because my ideologies on political structure in America are probably a little extreme, I'll just say no, I don't believe. I'm sorry. No, I don't believe that we are represented there. I'll just leave it at that.
Kind of to wrap this up, there's a verse about being that city on a hill. What is your idea of that?
Yeah, I mean, it's just interesting. I think that the Bible calls us to be one people from every tongue, nation, and tribe who come together for the goodness of that, of the gospel, to the glory of God, to show that humanity and our love for one another and our love for God transcends everything else. It transcends, you know, credit scores, and it transcends house markets, and it transcends stock markets. The only thing that really matters is, you know, giving God the glory in the things that we do, honoring him, and Imago Dei. And as the church, we need to be setting forth a better example with a lot of these things, with how we love one another through everything and how we hold each other accountable for different things. So what does that look like? I mean, we can look to the Bible for what it should look like. I just pray that we continue to grow together and there's more ecumenism, so more churches coming together, working for one good, and not letting theological differences stand in the way and letting petty doctrinal issues stand in the way of meeting the goals and meeting the needs of God's people. But yeah, we should be setting an example because the outside world is watching us one way or another. They're watching to see if we're hypocrites and if we're really doing it, and they're just hoping that we fail. So especially when we look at a topic like racial reconciliation, how much more perfect of an opportunity have we been presented to show that the gospel transcends everything than to love our brothers who are completely different than us in a way that is sacrificial and that is, you know, countercultural to everything that other people know. So
that's cool. Yeah. Cool, man. Last important question. Who's winning the AFC North this year?
Oh, that's an easy one. Baltimore Ravens. Purple City Bird Gang.
That's a reconciliation that may never happen. I don't know about that one. All right, man. Hey, thank you so much for your time.
Hey, I appreciate you, man. Thank you for not only having me on, but being willing to talk, have difficult conversations, because at the end of the day, I don't think that change happens without talking about tough things, without friction. There's no growth. So I appreciate you, brother. Denmark, me, just an all-star Chuck Taylor. I'm saying the fact I ain't get lost on the way here is amazing. Me, just a crooked stick in all this goodness, and somehow to school the prison pipeline.
Wow, those were some really some great things to listen to there. I'd like to thank Propaganda at the beginning for the interview that we did with him, and also Adam Johnson for taking the time to talk with me about those topics. That's a challenging topic to talk about, because it's a world that we live in today, but it's something that it definitely deserves conversation. And like I talked about with Propaganda, you know, a lot of times it is important to talk about it, but sometimes it's important just to listen. And that's kind of what the conversation with Adam was. It was just kind of hearing his heart on things and just his perspective. I think that's important for those of us that are light-skinned like me. Just hearing perspectives from our brothers in the African American community, some of their concerns and just, you know, some of their hurts, because a lot of things that's happened over the last couple of years has really hurt a lot of them, and it's kind of disheartening to see a lot of reactions to that, and that's kind of why I wanted to bring you that conversation with Adam and Propaganda. But I'd just like to really thank you guys for joining us on this episode. If you haven't already, check us out on iTunes. Subscribe to us on there. All you have to do is search Decent Christian Talk Podcast and you'll find us on there. You can also find us on our website, decentchristiantalk.com. We post all of our podcasts on there, and you can also subscribe on there on the right-hand side of the page with your email address. That lets you know every time we post a podcast, and that's free of charge. There's also a donate button on the right-hand side of the page if you log on to the website with your laptop. That helps us cover some of the funds that we have. We also have an Instagram account. For those of you that follow us on there, we posted all kinds of stuff from the DC Talk Jesus Freak Cruise. On DC Talk Podcast is our Instagram page. We also have our Twitter account where it all started, and that's DC Talk Act 2. That's DC Talk Act and the number 2. You can check us out on there as well. Hey guys, thank you so much for joining us today. Loved bringing you this episode. Our next episode is an exclusive with a band that just came back from hiatus there, To Speak of Wolves. They've got a brand new record coming out this weekend. Before we sign off, we're going to bring you a little preview of that podcast. But thank you so much for joining us. We'll catch you next time.
To Speak of Wolves is back with their first full-length album since 2012. You're listening to Haunt Me, a track off their new album, Dead in the Shadow. Dead in the Shadow will release everywhere July 21st. The band is going to be on tour with He Is Legend throughout July and August, so make sure you head over to their Bands in Town page and see if they're coming through your town. Again, Dead in the Shadow is available everywhere on July 21st. Pick it up then, or pre-order it now on iTunes at solidstate.merchnow.com.
Before we let you go, so you can pre-order the record at iTunes,
okay?
Yeah. But if you want some of the deluxe pre-order packages, go to solidstate.merchnow.com. and then you can choose from the plethora that is there. We have a deal. You can get a shirt and a CD for $20.
Nice.
You get a download link to Haunt Me the moment you make the purchase.
Moment.
And He Is Legend's new record, Few Rules. So if you don't have that, buy that too. Buy ours first.
Yeah, buy ours
And then
first.
Wait until you get paid next week and then buy their record.
He Is Legend's been around forever. They can wait. They can wait.
Thank you.
Thank you, guys.
Thanks, dudes.
Absolutely, man.
Don't forget to tip your waiters and waitresses. Thanks.